Now, Carlos Gonzalez and Kevin Conkell will give us some global Semaphore AD domain tips and tricks.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'll try to keep this light and entertaining as possible, prevent anybody from having any food comas and falling asleep. Do have to start with a disclaimer that this presentation, the content, and the opinions contained within are the author's own and do not reflect the views or opinions of Indeed Incorporated, the company we work for. I've got links here for last year's presentation. Last year, I was able to get the presentation approved by our marketing department and our legal department and all assorted, all the associated departments. I was not able to do that this year in time. So this talk will not be specific to Indeed, but everything that I talk about is applicable to any company of our size doing this thing. I'm Kevin Conkell. I work in IT systems for Indeed. A little bit about me. I was probably at an impressionable age, running Windows 95 on a home-built computer, and saw one too many blue screens of death, and started looking into Linux. Started with Red Hat 4, I think, well before Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And that got me interested in software engineering. And I went to school at RIT for a little bit of time, but eventually left and completed my computer science degree at Mercy College. Got about 12 years of systems administration experience. Linux sysad has been my core competency, but I've also been a Windows sysad, a macOS desktop admin. And for a number of years, I did some business-to-business consulting, much like Tranquil IT. But for the past 4 years, I've been managing large-scale Samba AD, and that's what I want to talk about today. But I'd also like to introduce my colleague, Carlos Gonzalez.
I'm Carlos Gonzalez. I'm also part of the IT systems team at Indeed. Before Indeed, mainly focused on Apple deployments, configuration management of Apple products. I joined Indeed about 2 years ago, and now I manage Indeed's Samba AD domain alongside Kevin.
But really, how about you? Because this is for you. But who are you? The Samba team, Samba developers, Samba users, and any enterprises, organizations, governments, French ministries willing to try Samba. But before we get into it, last year's talk, I had a number of criticisms about Samba, and I said, even despite that, go out and try it. And I want to make sure that that is not, what is the word, schadenfreude? So I'm hoping that this presentation can give you guys some information on how to do this without encountering some of the problems and difficulties that we have. But this CVE, we've spoken about earlier, this was a password reset exploitation vulnerability. All passwords for all users had been susceptible to a bug that would allow anyone to change anyone's password since forever. This is bad. Unless logging is set to 10, full debug, this exploit would not generate any logs and would be undetectable, and possibly not even then. This is even worse. But the actual impact? Truly very little. We have no evidence that this was ever exploited, but it did reinforce a misperception that Samba isn't enterprise grade. And this is the worst. The patches. We were informed ahead of time, thankfully, so we knew they were coming. We knew what time they'd be coming. And they were dropped at about 8 a.m. Central European summertime, which is great for Europe, Asia, Australia, Pacific Islands, but it's horrible time for the Americas. So I would like to propose to set a time of day for important security updates like this. My proposal would be 2 p.m. Central European time. It's midnight in New Zealand, 5 a.m. in the west coast of the U.S., but it puts most of the 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. hours, which I consider core sleeping hours, puts that over the Pacific Ocean. I think that's a better way to go forward, hopefully. You would for this bug. Well, we also got hit by a few other bugs in the Samba 4.7 and 4.6 code. 13095, 13328, and a few other assorted ones. Link attribute mishandling and corruption has probably been the number one cause of my pain and frustration. I assume that this is probably a problem for any of the Samba administrators that have been doing this, and I really don't want to go into the details too much of that because I'll be looking like Stewie here otherwise. So I want to talk about how these bugs could manifest themselves in a theoretical company. Acme Global Corp. It's a large global multinational with over 10,000 employees, contractors, and vendors. It has tens of thousands of user objects in AD with tens of thousands of group objects. And many of these groups are used to facilitate role-based access control to gate access to corporate networks and resources. Pretty standard stuff. And in this theoretical situation, Acme Global Corp has an employees group with over 7,000 members. And as a large multinational, employees come and go every day, so the group membership in that group is changing frequently. What happens when this bug manifests itself here? You've got a group listing, Alice, Bob, Charlie, all the way down alphabetical order to Xavier. And when this bug gets triggered, it would just start writing one user, replacing that user down the list. And then some of the consistency checks within Active Directory prevent any changes to that group again. So now you've emptied out the group essentially of most of its users, and you can't modify it anymore to add the users back. So when large swaths of users are removed from these large groups that are often used to gate access to standard applications and tools, think of the things that you get access to just as a base employee, and that being taken away from you as your group membership was removed. To further complicate things, some SAML providers do account provisioning and deprovisioning of third-party applications. This is great for, you know, when you want to have Slack or something, and you don't want to pay for users that have left the company, and you don't want to manually go in and add and remove. But when the SAML connector, or the directory sync, sees that all of these users have been removed, it removes their accounts from the application as well. And in this situation, Acme Global would have experienced widespread outages to core applications given to the large employee base. So, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Seems logical. It's too risky. But how can we have a single source of truth for our user directory with multiple baskets? And aren't there more problems with multiple baskets? So no, put all your eggs in one basket and then watch that basket. Popularized by Mark Twain, but Andrew Carnegie's the original quote there. So monitoring. I've been a sysad a long time, so when you think of monitoring, I'm like, oh, well, Nagios, you know, that's kind of an industry standard, but everyone hates it. Does anybody here not hate it? My assumption was correct. So a few things I want to do are check ports, you know, very basic monitoring. I've listed them all here. I'm not going to read them, but I check them both locally and remotely, because If you have a large scale deployment here with a complex network, you probably have firewalls and network ACLs. And sometimes as you're deploying new sites and new domain controllers, these may not be updated to allow the traffic. Whereas on the server, it's running, it's happy, it's like accepting connections, but nothing's coming in. So here are some commands we use, or have used, or you can use to see which ports are open locally. These are very quick, non-intrusive. They don't actually use any of the Samba resources to test whether or not they're available. Those are the main, well, that and the actual replication state. When replication starts failing, things can go south very quickly. And as Andrew mentioned earlier today, the Samba tool DRS show REPL output is a bunch of garbage, but it is parsable if you, like me, are an awkful sysadmin. So I have this here for you. And in the comments, I have kind of what it breaks down to within awk. I break out the records on blank lines, because that's how the blocks are broken up, and tab field separator, because there's a ton of tabs in there. So I take that very verbose output, and I can kind of condense it down to actually what I want. So here's an example healthy output. You know, I see my domain controller GUID, the site. I see which domain controllers it's replicating with, the partition it's replicating, and the last timestamp of when it was successful, which is great. I want to see this. But what I don't want to see is this. This captures the number of consecutive failures across the partitions and puts that at the top of the output, because unfortunately, Nagios and NRPE have a 4,000 character limit, so I can't get all the data into or out of the check into Nagios. So I want to put the problems up top. And this will tell me which partition's failing, which domain controller, and since when, which is very useful when trying to resolve some of these issues. But there's also some core features you would also want to check and make sure that they're doing the proper job. Nagios check LDAP and check procs and check DNS. One thing we've experienced many times is bind likes to crash. And when DNS goes down, it becomes very bad very quickly. So I recommend checking it, setting up an event handler that if it does crash, it automatically restarts. But because nobody likes Nagios, we're constantly evaluating new monitoring platforms and new technologies to monitor our things. NetData is one that's open sourced. It collects several thousands of metrics per device. And all of these are collected and visualized in real time. And to give you an example of what that looks like on a standard system, you can go through, scroll around, see things. And the beauty of this product, actually, is it auto-discovers whatever is on the system that it can track and monitor. And this is the list of things it can do out of the box. There's quite a few there. Samba is not on there yet, but hopefully that will change. Now, I don't want to go to every domain controller and go to the NetData interface to look at it. I want to collect it. So I need a time series database and a central repository for all of this. Prometheus is very good for that. Oops. But then after collecting it and centralizing it, I need to visualize it again. So that's where we use Grafana. Their slogan is, no matter where your data is or what kind of database it lives in, you can bring it together with Grafana beautifully. It can pull from Zabbix, Prometheus, Elasticsearch, and many other data stores. And we use this to calculate the domain jackness factor. when you have linked attribute corruption and replications failing, and you have inconsistent user counts, group counts, computer counts, just object counts are varying all over the place, you need to find out what is going on and how bad of the situation is it. So what we do is we calculate the standard deviation of all object counts per object type across all the domain controllers, multiply it by 2 to kind of approximate like a 95% confidence value. And with that number, if you make a single object change, you will see the domain jackness factor go up to 2 as it replicates out, and it'll start going back down to 0. So that's acceptable. We've seen it in the many hundreds, which is not good. Another large component of our monitoring comes from Elastic. And if anybody's familiar with an elk stack or has heard of that, it's exactly like this. It's a picture of 3 elks on top of each other. But really, the components that you would want to use for Samba to get Samba's logs into your elk stack, I would start off with FileBeat. It's a lightweight log data shipper. It has prospectors that monitor log files, converts it to JSON, and then ships to the desired output. We send our FileBeat logs to Logstash. And here is some examples of configuration you may want to use. Log.samba prints 2 lines for every log entry. So I have a multi-line pattern of, does it start with 2-0? So this will work until 2100. And somebody else can handle that problem then. One other thing you can do is if it is a JSON output, which Samba is starting to output a lot of, thankfully, you can tag it as JSON and then transform it differently when it gets to Logstash. Logstash is an open source server-side data processing pipeline that ingests data from multiple sources simultaneously, transforms it, and then sends it to your favorite stash. Now, this is a quote from Elasticsearch. But the log transformation and data extraction is actually very, very useful. So some of the things that I would recommend doing is putting in some grok filters. And if you had a human-readable log entry like this, this would show up without any Logstash configuration. This would just be the message. And you'd have to search within the message for the things you're finding. And you can't really filter on subcomponents of that message, which is what you want to do. The grok filter configuration is quite lengthy. So I'm leaving that as an exercise for the readers, listeners, viewers. But what it can do is take that and put it into this kind of format in JSON, where I can specify what the components of that actual log message are so that I can then filter on them and graph, visualize things off of them as well. So I take it from after Logstash, we ship it to Elasticsearch. It's a distributed, RESTful search and analytics engine capable of solving a growing number of use cases. As the heart of the Elastic stack, it centrally stores your data so you can discover the expected and uncover the unexpected. Yeah, that's a decent sales pitch. What I'd rather point out is that it's actually very simple to manage and scale. But be aware that it is a storage hog. It on average consumes about 5 times the amount of data you're putting into it. So if you're generating, you know, a terabyte of logs a month, you need 5 terabytes per month that you want to keep a history of. And if you want to do trending over a long period of time, you want to have as much of that as possible. So be careful that you throw enough resources at this. But now Elasticsearch is just a database. We want to visualize it. And Kibana is the Elastic visualization platform. Only works for Elasticsearch, though. It's their stack, so that's fine. And I have a quote in here from their little sales pitch as well. Something else that you may want to incorporate, though, if you go down this path, is ElastAlert. This is actually developed by Yelp and open sourced. It's easy and flexible alerting with Elasticsearch. And it supports these types of alerts that you can generate. Are there X events in Y time? Has the rate of these events increased, decreased to a certain threshold? Have things flatlined? Are there certain logs that we actually, if this happens, throw an alert? It can do all that. Now, let's say you're a consulting company and you have multiple domains over multiple networks, and you still want to centrally collect the logs so that you can keep an eye on all of your customers. Well, there's a way to do that. You can have the FileBeat clients sending up to the cloud. Google Compute Engine is what I would currently recommend, but any cloud provider is fine. But to secure the transit of that information, since you don't want all this just flying in clear text over the internet, we use TLS, and based off of a common CA, each client has its own certificate. And you can configure FileBeat to use your client certificate to authenticate against the Logstash server in the cloud that also has a certificate from the common CA. Put it into a Redis database, set a reasonable threshold of how much data you want to cache there, because that's essentially what it's doing, and then configure Logstash within your own corporate environment to connect to your Google Cloud Engine instance, to that Redis instance, and pull it down. Now, there's no encryption on Redis, so I would recommend using an S-tunnel, and you could even use the same certificates that you have deployed to facilitate this anyway. Configuration management is another key component.
Yeah, so let's say you're a consulting company and you know you're constantly building DCs. You don't want to have to do that process manually. Or you know, for example, with you know domain controllers that have all these different tools configured, logging and monitoring and stuff that require you know configuration files to be set. You need you know a configuration management tool. You can leverage all that with Puppet. Puppet's a configuration management tool. It also includes a internal CA, basic cert handling. There's also Puppet Forge, which is a community-driven library of Puppet modules that you can go on there and search for, you know, certain applications that you would like to deploy. And if somebody has already, you know, figured out a way to deploy that software and configure that software, you'll most likely find a Puppet module on there that you can then, you know, clone and use yourself. For example, there's a link on there for a Samba Puppet module that you can go on there and check out. Foreman. Foreman is an external node classifier. If you have Foreman, you gain the ability of setting parameters on a variety of conditions. You also get a very nice GUI where you can go in there and do some fact-checking. You can also change, you know, parameters on hosts. You can deploy VMs from there as well. So it's a great addition to have.
And with that, you could specify which version of Samba you want to run on your domain controllers. And when a new patch comes out at 2 o'clock in the morning that you want to apply very quickly and very rapidly, you can just increment the number, assuming that your Puppet module is written correctly. And Puppet by default runs every 30 minutes and compares its manifest against its current state and applies any corrections. So if Acme Global Corp needed to deploy this, to upgrade all their Samba domain controllers, they could very easily do it in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. And one other thing that I would like to give caution and advise is manage the replication topology with the KCC. I don't actually know if this is necessary anymore due to the number of performance increases, but I haven't been willing to risk it just yet. So my rule of thumb is the power of three, or n plus one where n equals two, because I'm doing replication, so I need two. So we recommend grouping sites geographically into triplets and then creating inter-site links between these little groups. And I recommend, if you're a global organization, kind of set up a ring around the world, because I've seen many times that large gaps, transatlantic or transpacific links, sometimes do go down, or they have high latency and it impacts replication. I want to talk about the not too distant future of Samba. We need better testing. We want to have the ability to set up lab domains, something Andrew Bartlett spoke about, the backup rename of existing domain to preserve the scale and number of objects so that we can just mirror production in our lab environment. And now we can, we can also do production workload emulation with the traffic replay. So we can also scale it to impact it even more and determine what performance regressions or issues we may have in a future release before we actually deploy it. Some things I'd like to see is actually a better KCC. Why should I go in and put costs on these link transports when it could just determine the latency between these sites and then set that? Why do I need to limit the number of replication partners? Can't Samba, you know, just limit the active links it uses to only what's needed? And if a bridgehead server isn't specified in the site, that site will not replicate with other sites, which is less than desirable. That's our talk. Thank you. I actually want to give a special thank you to Microsoft. I did not thank them last year, but I have to thank the new Microsoft for what they've done. This whole project wouldn't exist had they not started Active Directory and had not innovated the way they had. And to see them becoming so Linux friendly, pro open source, it's a great change from the what I consider the old Microsoft. And the new Microsoft seems like a good partner and a good company to work with. I'd also like to thank Catalyst for all of their extensive development efforts. Cernet for hosting this and providing Samba Plus packages, and the whole Samba team and community. Does anybody have any questions?
So you had remarkably few, you only had a few moans at the end, and I was expecting much more. What isn't working for you?
Actually, right now, things are pretty good.
That can't last, surely.
Yes, thank you for jinxing me. aside from, you know, don't drop patches at 2 a.m. our local time. When? Yeah, 2 p.m. your time. I suggested it.
Are you volunteering?
I'm sorry?
Are you volunteering?
Am I volunteering?
Yeah.
To release it at 2 p.m.?
Not your time.
2 p.m. your time? I mean, it's...
Yeah,
early in the morning for me, but if you need me to go click the button, I can do it. Just show me where it is.
So in your monitoring section, you were showing the horror of parsing human-oriented output from the Samba tool, which is topic of what I was talking this morning in my talk about adding the machine-readable output, which happens to be in JSON already, mm-hmm. so you kind of get what you already produced there. Would it help you if we... And we also have audit logs in JSON already in, I think, 4.8. So you don't need to do this log extraction yeah. with FileBeat. But would it help to extend that to other areas so that we could speed out the JSON formatted?
Absolutely. Let's get a show of hands. Who likes reading logs? Oh, we got a few. All right. Who would prefer that machines handle all of that and just give you what you need, the knowledge out of those logs?
That's also good. Yeah.
More hands for that. So outputting to JSON can facilitate that. The Grok filters to parse the human readable logs is very ugly. So ugly, I wouldn't show it.
So I think you're running into something that we've had for a long time. There's a tension between logs that the developers need to actually help debug the code and logs that the users need to figure out what's going on in a particular case. And the problem for us is that the people who are working on the code are all developers, so the human readable logs we put in are to help us find bugs and figure out what's going wrong. What would be incredibly helpful is if you were able to come in, or someone like you was able to come in and say, here are a list of the events I want to know about. You know, that here are the things that I want to monitor in a machine-readable form. And then at that point, we might separate out the debugging for the developers of sort of, okay, what's going on in this function? Did we get to here? Whatever. To the basically the difference between debug logs and events, mm-hmm. and at that point we might be able to have an event system that we can just put probes in at the right point that sends to something that you can then machine parse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody needs to tell us where to put those things
on the mailing list.
Yes, actually, yeah.
So we actually added and used the event system. In fact, the self-test for the JSON logs actually literally generate those things as an event that go across the message bus. Yeah. That's all there. It's all used in the test. It's not suitable for production due to some issues around exit of servers. But it's the logs are the home of them because it's the only place that's sort of stable to disk. From all the places.
Right now, that's in the Samba process, right?
No, it's all used in SMBD. That's how we get all the logs for the file server, for the audit events and things. Yeah, that's all there.
Since we're on the topic of logs, I do have a little bit of criticism there. Log levels. You've got 10 levels. Zero gives you exactly that much information, zero. One still doesn't, two doesn't, three doesn't. Four, you start to find something useful. And then I think it's around five where it's just, and now it's completely useless.
Yeah, at least for the latest code we have, basically, we've moved away from the 10-level thing, which really, as you say, is nobody used consistently anyway. So now we have log warning, log error, log notice, and log debug. So these are the four or five levels we have. And as new code, as code is modified, whenever you change a line, what we're starting to insist on in code reviews is if you change a debug line, you have to change it to one of those four levels. Now they're mapped to, so I think it's a 0, 5, something, and 3, 5, and 10, I think. But at least it should reduce that complexity. You should at least. But again, these are developer log messages, not the kind of user level log messages that you need. Mm. What's suitable and helpful for us developers is different from what's suitable for users. And so far, we haven't heard enough from users saying, give me a list of these events, no others.
I'd also note that after probably a decade of passive resistance, the Active Directory code is now using debug classes.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
And I will hand over the microphone again to Jeremy for the closing session.
Right. I guess